The universe cries out in despair and recognition for their children. They sigh a thousand breaths. They relive the lives of every single one, every single human, every single animal creature that existed on this earth. They exist in the moment. And that's what I shall exist in right now. I'll exist in this very preliminary moment, the moment between moments, the idea, the concept that this is the cold open. Welcome to the cold open, everybody. I was thinking about what to do for like a funny April Fool's prank, but you know what? No, it's fine. You know what? It's okay. We don't have to be crazy here. We don't have to go crazy between you and me. You know, we can just be normal for once. It is kind of sad to see it die out, though. You know, like we used to really get really into this kind of stuff beforehand, but now it's just, what's the word? It's just kind of died out. No one wants to do it anymore. We're not children, you know. We're not children. I remember back in the day there was April Fools. We used to do stuff for April Fools back when I was in elementary school. But at the end of the day, I think either got too out of hand or, you know, the teachers just didn't like it in the first place. Because they were like, yeah, okay, April Fools is over, guys. They're like middle of the day, like after first recess. Okay, April Fools is over, guys. It only exists in the morning. That's the only time you can do April Fools. I'm like, what? And I believed them. For some reason, you know, is this kind of that parental thing that you just harbor forever. We're basically taking the show that I loved today. We're taking this show and we're just ripping it into a million pieces. That is the appropriate response, I think, to the death of this show. The show had a very good run. It had a lot to go with it, but fortunately, it just wasn't enough. Without further ado, though, welcome to the yearly wrap-up. Well, the last yearly wrap-up, because the show's ending right now. This is the last episode. Welcome to the yearly wrap-up of Independent Incidentals. Where I, for the last time, will be going through every single episode so far and ranking them based on how I think I did and how good the game I was covering was. How's that sound? Will that cheer you up? I hope it will. I really hope so, because I'm really down in the dumps right now from that news, I'll be honest. It's just so sad to see it go, man. The show that I love, that is my pride and joy, is taken away from me by a banana-shaped figure. Oh, it's just repulsive, absolutely. I don't know how he even got in here. I don't know what he did, but he took the show from me, and now this is the last episode. And even if he boots it up again, it won't be the same. It just won't be the same. I gotta put myself together. Hold on. Okay. I think we're good. Now, if you want to go through every single episode, I will post a quick story update on Instagram at Independent Incidentals, so you can see the beautiful tapestry that we have weaved together over the past couple of months. I believe the link you can actually use in this case, you can go to RadioLaurier.com, right? I just figured this out just now. This is like new tech right now. Yo, RadioLaurier.com. Not slash independent incidentals, but slash series slash independent incidentals. That way, you can actually see the full descriptions of all the episodes. And you can see them in full detail. You won't have to, like, you know, accidentally click another episode when you're trying to watch another episode. It's a very, very cool thing. I don't know any other way to get in this webpage particularly. So, there's that. I mean, yeah, no, there's literally no link for it. It still says Mondays at 3 p.m. That's extremely funny. I might have to talk to Grace about that. Besides the point, Shall we get into it? Shall we dive in? I hope we can. I hope we can. Because if we can't, then some people got to strap in. Because this is the last episode. Are you good? Are you all right? Are you strapped in? Do you put a bib on you too? I'm sorry. I'm getting a little sidetracked here. This is the last episode. I know. I shouldn't be yelling at you. I know. I'm sorry. Anyway, besides the point, let's begin with episode 0. This was the pilot episode to Independent Incidentals, and it basically just went over the entire structure of how the story, the show, would go on. How my idea would eventually be able to flourish and blossom into the thing that it is now. I think I mentioned here specifically, if I go to my actual notes here, I try to keep this open for future reference, but besides the point. Why don't I keep it, like, more organized or something? I don't know. I could, like, make a fun little thing for it, but who knows, man? Who knows? Yeah, so let's quickly go over what I specifically wanted this show to be. What I wanted to improve on from After Class. Well, first of all, the show was supposed to be on Wednesdays at 5 p.m., and now it's on Tuesdays, and it'll never be ever again, because the show's being taken over, of course. It's just so sad, man. I can't do this. It's fine. Let's just keep... We'll focus on the now. I have this whole 45 minutes with you guys. Isn't that great? Isn't that cool? I hope so. Anyway, first of all, I wanted to edit the episodes, which I'm doing nowadays. Before, I think during the middle of this term specifically, I had a very, very hard time keeping track of all the editing specifically. It's a very simple task, to be honest with you. I just have to comb through all of the video, all the entire episode, trim the fat, and then also trim the specific swear words that might pop up during the cold open or the actual content itself. Now, here's the thing. I don't swear that much, which is great, because I don't have to edit that much, which is also great. Yeah, I also wanted to add some cool, like, quirky little, like, post-editing stuff, like, little, like, hey, it's me, Post-Dominic, get you guys, I'm here in the flesh. But that seemed a bit tacky to me. A lot of other podcasts did that, and it just doesn't really jive well with me. So I'm gonna keep that to a minimum. That's a minimum thing. I don't really care. I think I did a pretty good job for what I was given. Right now, I finished editing episode 16. I'm gonna pop that in there, and we're gonna edit the other two interview episodes, which I'll actually mention right now, well, in this episode specifically. Because I think those episodes are probably the best ones. Those are the ones I'm probably, if I were to give a portfolio, if I were to show somebody the show, those would be the ones that I'd be showing them first. Now, here's the problem. I did say I'm not handing out any damn tickets for free, specifically in regards to you guys, the audience, right? You're there. I get it, right? That's cool and everything. But, I haven't really been engaging that much with my Instagram account, so it's just kind of like, yeah, I post weekly, whether or not I'm live or not, and occasionally when I'm, like, a new episode's got uploaded, and also with the interviews. But those are really kind of easy, and not really the ones that I wanted to actually engage the audience, but the problem is you need an actual audience to do that. And if I don't have an audience, what are we going to do then? We can't just, again, I think marketing the show will probably be my new revised version. If I were to actually continue it, because this is the last episode, of course. But if I were to continue the show, then marketing would definitely be the first one. I think that's probably what he's going to do with it, for sure. Absolutely. It's just not going to have the same vibe, though, man. It's just... so sad. Just so sad. Anyway. guests. I wanted to get more guests, of course. Problem is that it wasn't really a choice of me. It was more of a choice of who I was engaging with at the time, right? If you can't really get guests on board, there's nothing you can really do to, convince them otherwise, right? I talked to one of my friends from music, specifically Cassie. She's great. Most people, respectively, are very shy when it comes to the show itself. I kind of convinced them by saying, like, hey, look, literally no one is looking right now. This is pretty much just me talking into the void. Even if there are people listening, hello, you guys. Hello, ladles and germs. How you guys doing? Even if there's people watching, it's not like I can see them or necessarily interact with them, right? And even if it is, most of them are my friends. So it's not like I'm actually, you know, talking to strangers, per se. But, you know, I would also like to eventually reach out. Maybe get some actual pre-recorded stuff from so I can, you know, interview people from back home. My high school friends, for example. The people that I kind of grew up with, maybe, from Brampton. I don't know. The sky is the limit, really, with this kind of stuff. So it's just really open-ended in a lot of ways. I got the interviews. Again, it all just comes back around to the interview stuff. So I'm just like, you know, wait for when we talk about 17 and 18, and then I can actually give you a good metric for that. Anyway, this specific episode, the pilot episode, I would definitely give a solid B-. Needs more examples. If this was a paper, definitely needs more examples. Needs more show your work. Show your work specifically with the show itself. Now, this is the first actual episode, which I covered Slay the Spire, which I was playing a lot during the interim. This is because of a funny streamer called Northern Lion, who I watched a lot back in the day. Well, I still technically watch him, but I'm kind of taking a break from all the internet stuff for now. So it's kind of just like in the background. He exists. He's cool. I watch his stuff. He was playing a lot of Slay the Spire when I was like getting into school again. So I was like, yeah, you know what? I don't have that much to do right now because my workload's very minimal in the first few weeks. So why not just quickly boot up a couple games of Slay the Spire and then I can talk about it, right? Give me a nice little foray into doing this again. Now, specifically with Slay the Spire, I believe, this was interesting because I had a lot of reservations as to how I could like make describing video games interesting, because that's like one of the main things, right? I'm trying to give these games a spotlight, but if the audience doesn't really give a damn about it or doesn't really know what I'm talking about specifically with it because they don't have preliminary knowledge regarding, I don't know, deck building games, right? You won't really have that much of a connective layer that you could really talk about. I use my nerdy presence as a sort of bridge, a sort of like, you know, cushy bridge that allows people to engage with the topics I'm talking about. But if you're not really into that kind of stuff, if you're more of a party animal, or you're more of a person who, you know, I guess not antisocial, because I hate the word antisocial. Have I talked to you about that? I hate the word antisocial. I remember my roommates called me antisocial behind my back several times when people come over. And I'm like, yeah, I don't talk to people that much outside of this. It's because I don't have anything important to say. I feel like a lot of the time people have, like, are completely, what's the word? Unreserved about what they put into the atmosphere, right? Your words are your currency. And if you spend them willy-nilly without any regard to what you're spending them for, then you're going to spend your time, a lot of your time, doing, like, talking about things that you're, I don't know. Just, that guy's kind of like, this is my enema. This cleanses me. This allows me to just, like, say whatever I want to in the void, right? I don't really have to worry about it. But when you're talking to another human being, your words are your currency. And you have to make your points known, like I'm making right now, or else you're just going to beat around the bush a lot, or you're going to not even make any sense to a lot of people. And you're just going to kind of just like coexist in reality, and you know, you're not gonna have any actual tangential meaning to your life. At least that's how I view it anyway. I don't know. Anyway, I talked a lot about that kind of stuff. I wanted to do specifically with this one the extra fan-made DLC where it had like a bunch, like hundreds of new cards. You get to play as the bosses, there was a new character, all that kind of stuff. Northern Lion even got to those characters before I did. So it's just kind of like, what am I doing? You know? I just don't have the time anymore. That sucks. But it's the truth. Anyway, I give this one also a B-. Again, it's like, it's my first foray. I gotta give myself a little credit. I wouldn't give myself a C for this episode. But I definitely wouldn't give myself higher than a B. Because it's like, we're mitigating a lot of an audience specifically regarding this. So it's like, what are we doing here, really? Right? I don't know. It's great. I love it. Anyway, the next episode is Hollow Knight. This one also seemed a bit like I wasn't really talking about what I wanted to talk about. Specifically regarding the game itself. I think with all the other stuff, I think I did a pretty good job with. But like, the gameplay itself, I'm like, yeah, okay. There's all these cool interconnected worlds, this world building, this vast underground kingdom that has been abandoned and possessed by a celestial entity that now, like, her little minion zombies are roaming around the world. These little bugs are roaming around the world, and you have to slay them, and you have to defeat them and eventually become the vessel. Sorry, I spoiled it. Hollow Knight's been out for so long. It's been over, well, it's been 8 years, but you know. Either way, I feel like I can give myself a little bit of credit for this. I think it's actually better than Slay the Spire, mainly because I finally got my footing with it, and I can actually talk about other things regarding Hollow Knight, because I actually kind of engage with this game more so than Slay the Spire. That's the thing a lot of the time as well. If you engage with the game more than you know would normally, you're kind of pretty, you're gonna have a better time explaining it, or at least making it more engaging. So that's a solid B right there. I think that's like a little bit of a bump up. Now Helix 2, I did like this one, and I like the next one as well. Helix 2 specifically was a very fun game because I had a lot more time with it. If we look back, I remember I was, like, specifically, like, looking at the game, and I was like, whoa, okay, there's, like, a lot of stuff here. This is way more than I could ever have ever imagined, right? Way more than the first game that I covered during Afterclass. I'm so sorry I punched you. I deeply apologize. I'm just so upset. Oh, my goodness. Why did I sell it, man? It was so much money, to be fair. It was, like, at least $100 billion. But, like, you know. I just couldn't deal with the burden of the show anymore. Anyway, besides the point. If I could interview anybody that I've covered that has not already been covered, Mason Lindroth would definitely be one of them. I love his style. I love his work. And I just love Helix 2. It's just a fun game. As sometimes, no, I don't really enjoy turn-based combat, to be fair. Which is why I haven't finished Omomori. I haven't finished a bunch of other games because of that. But this game makes it fun for me. It makes it a good time, rather than an annoying time. It makes a grind into an actual tangible experience with good music. And very, very differently stylized graphics. They call bleeding leaking. It's funny. And also, foam shield. Anyway. I think this one's a solid A-. Solid A-. I think this is like the first like true testament to my capabilities as a host and as a research, you know, as a person who researches video games, go figure. What a fun time. What a great time we're living in right now. It's such a great time. Anyway, Helix 2, A-. What about Thronefall? I think this one was even better, because I think what I did with this one specifically was I connected it to Euro games, right? And it connected it to the idea that, like, Germans are all about their board games. And along with all these other, like, right, European countries, like Square Enix. Not Square Enix. What was the one called? Like, they have their own specific style to them that's different from, say, a Japanese company or, you know, an American company, right? All these kind of games kind of click together in a more, you know, I guess an addicting game. Sure, it makes it more addicting. Absolutely. But it also just kind of makes it more, you know, minimalist. It doesn't have to have so many rules. It doesn't have to, you know, bolster a wide variety of play styles, because you already have, you know, you can do so much more with so little. You only have, like, a couple, like, it's a tower defense game. That's pretty much the crux of it. But the different layouts, the different towers, the different ways you can utilize, you have to balance economy and defense and offense, right? Those things just kind of strike me very well with this game. And it kind of got me cooking. And I can actually research the people who worked on it. And it's just a fun process. I loved researching this one specifically. So, you know what? Yeah, I think Mason Lindroth and Grizzly, anyone from Grizzly Games, if you're willing to come out to the show, I'd love to interview you. But for now, you're just getting an A. You guys are in the A tier. I think Faster and Light also gets an A-, because I think I finally hit my stride here, right about here. I wanted to do Into the Breach episode again, because I wanted to revamp the old one that I did for Independent Incidentals. Not for Independent Incidentals, for the season one, technically, of Independent Incidentals, which in this case was After Class with Dominic, right? I wanted to do that again, but I wanted to do it with my roommate specifically, because him and I, we had like a full hour and a half discussion over dinner about playing the game and just like the whole strategy behind it. And he knew what he was talking about. He's an engineering major at Waterloo. He knows what he's talking about. So I'm like, hell yes, brother. I am pumped, right? Unfortunately, I think he's doing a work term right now, so he had to sublet, so he ain't here at the moment. But hey, if he's back for the summer, Edison, please come back to me, please. I need you. I need to work on the show. There's a lot of shows that there's like a lot of games that I scrapped because of just like different like people just like coming and going, right? I wanted to do Stardew Valley, but then my girlfriend broke up with me. Tough, you know, that's just tough. You can't really change that, right? So I'm thinking probably during the summer I'm just gonna like get addicted to Stardew Valley again, and I can really dive deep into it. It will be fun. It'll be quite fun. Again, you know, other games that I want to cover, obviously Disco Elysium, a few other ones, like those games I'm just kind of like, gotta keep them close to your heart. But also, I want to get more guests on the show. So it's kind of a hard balance. It's a hard line to balance on with this kind of stuff. Either way, next one was Enter the Gungeon. This is the first C tier. I didn't like this episode. Mainly because I'm like, this game itself is just kind of like, I want to like it. I really want to like it. But it's like, I feel like the progression on a lot of the game doesn't, some of the choices they make in the game don't really make that much sense. Like, why does the rat keep stealing my items when I go into another room? I want to keep the items. I just want to... You go away from the next levels anyway. You have to go further down the gungeon. Why? Why make the items despawn when you go into the next room? It doesn't make any damn sense. It's just a lot of those... It's kind of a more of a elusive game that I don't have any patience for. So when I was covering it, I was like, it's cool, I guess. I don't really want to say anything bad about it. Because, it's an independent game. Like, these kind of games I want to uphold. But if I can't do that, then what's the point, right? Either way, that's just food for thought. Let's see. So the first missing miscellaneous episode I did was episode 7. specifically, it was about off, and it was about frog fractions. I loved frog fractions. I finished the whole game before the show started, and I was like, dude. I want to convince all my friends to play frog fractions. I wanted to do it for April Fools, but you know what? Either way, Frog Fractions is such a good foray into games that just don't care that they exist, or at least want to do whatever the hell they want with their game and don't have any care in the world about who it's marketed towards or who like will actually like it, because people will like it. It's just a matter of time, right? This game was made like years before, during the Flash era, and eventually got more popular because it got remade for Steam, in a more feasible format. Frog Fractions is just such a good like understanding of like, yeah, I'm just gonna throw whatever at the wall. I'm gonna make an entire section where there's just a guy narrating a fake history of boxing. I'm gonna make you become the president, and then you can control the country through the use of and it's just like, what is this game, right? Like, I was having that thought the entire time, and I'm like, yes, this is this game. It's such a good game. And Off is also a very, very, very good game. Both break the fourth wall. Both kind of just are more meta in their own special ways. Off is more meta in the sense that it takes the preconceived notion of a RPG and then flips it on its head, right? It's the first one that kind of paints your character as the evil one. And Frog Fractions just takes the absolute piss in whatever it's doing. So it was a good balance, I think. Humor and more serious tones, I think. I think it was a really good choice. For an episode that I had no idea where it was even going, I think I did pretty well with it. So I'm going to give myself a B+ for that one. That was quite the decent episode. Ooh. I'm debating whether this is the first S tier. I hated Rogue itself, so maybe not S, but I think it's at least, it has to be an A+. I think Rogue, the Rogue, it kind of wrapped up all of the Rogue likes I was covering over these episodes. Because most of these, you can go down the list that I just went through, most of these are Rogue likes, right? It just goes to show. But I was able to actually utilize, you know, this is like the first one I truly sat down. I was like, okay, I'm going to do some actual research. How did this come? Where did this start? Where did this progress? Where is it now? Where can we see it now, you know? And especially stuff with like the Berlin interpretation. I didn't even know this kind of stuff existed, right? These like small groups of people in Germany just coming up with the definition of what a roguelike is. I'm like, insanity to me. Like it's just like, I never knew this stuff existed before I was born. You expect this stuff to exist like after, or you know, you never expect the thing that you're passionate about to actually have some legs and actually show, you know, some humanity in the world. It's interesting. It's so interesting. But this one's just a solid episode. I don't know what to tell you. Rogue itself sucks, so it's not an S. But I think I know there's one. There's a few episodes I think that are an S tier. All right. Baba is You. I remember I just talked about Baba is You. It wasn't really that much meat on the bone, I'll be honest. It's just pretty much just like, I played this game. Let's talk about it, right? And I remember I talked about it with Daniel when he was on the show. I think if you look, you can find it probably. It was one of the later episodes. It was the second term, I believe. But Baba is You has such a unique concept in its puzzle solving. It's one of the best puzzle games, I think, that's come out in the past decade. But most of it is almost impossible for me to solve or understand or have any like kind of exemplary knowledge that allows me to understand, because it's like, the rule set itself is so esoteric. You can make your own rules by shifting blocks together, right? And the way these blocks fit and the way that the world works is kind of discovered through experimentation. Again, it's kind of like what Torquato said when I was doing an interview with him. Most of games, or the games that he likes to play the most, are ones that are play, that are experimentation, that are you just picking up little blocks, little pieces, and trying to fit them together and trying to figure out what they do. And if you're stuck, you can look them up. But like most of the time, you're just going to kind of like figure it out from there, right? It's interesting. I think this one's a B. I think this one's a B because it's not like, again, I don't feel like I put too much work in this one, which was kind of annoying. But either way, I think this is the first S tier has to be the Club Penguin episode with Carissa, right? I feel like even though there was like a few moments where she was kind of like, because I told her at the very start, she kind of got upset with me, but like, what are you going to do about that? She kind of got upset with me because I was like, yeah, don't worry about it. You're just going to talk about Club Penguin and stuff. It's going to be fun. And then I just like regurgitate all the things that I researched over the past week before that episode occurred. So I was like, yeah, it was kind of like, you know, it took a bit for her to get warmed up. But I think at the same time, she did the same thing to me with Glee. So take that, Carissa, if you're listening to this right now. But no, I think it was very super insightful to see where like the humble beginnings of such a game that eventually snowballed into an incredibly interesting market that Disney invested into with all these other MMOs, like, you know, World of Cards and Tinkerbell MMO and stuff like that. Like, these games were such a standalone within like the late 2000s, early 10s era of video games and online video games especially, right? That's just the insane part to me. The amount of money that they made during this time was the insane thing to me. Either way, that's definitely an S tier. And we obviously got talking with other ones too, and it was just kind of like, it was natural. It felt like the most natural episode. I think that's why it deserves the S tier. Anyway, the next one is Balatro. I'm getting back to my backlog, so I'm actually starting to remember some of these episodes now. Because I don't remember anything from last term. Don't ask me about anything from last term. That's old news. That's old hat right there. But Balatro especially was like getting back to old tricks. I feel like it was just kind of like standard, solid episode. I think I did a lot of research for that one too, especially because I was like, okay, Dan Giesling did an interview with him. I think Game Maker's Toolkit described a specific problem that I found very curious and interesting about the way that information is displayed to you, right? Because you could just display the entire outcome of the hand that you're creating, right? With this game specifically, right? You could show the full outcome, but if you just show the amount of chips you're going to earn, the base amount of chips, and the multiplier, right? The player kind of has to guess. It's a high-stakes situation, right? You don't want to have to necessarily do the math every time, but it makes it more interesting. It makes it more playful rather than number crunching, which is a very common theme with a lot of these games, right? I'm going to give Window Kill, the next game on this list, an A-, mainly on the premise that I'm like, I love the idea of game jams. I have for a very long time. I just never had the necessarily, I never had the gumption to go through with them. Well, once, but then I didn't have enough time. That was the Wild Godot Jam, which unfortunately, again, did not have enough time to complete. But there's still the prototype. Again, shameless plug. If you want to check out the game, go to my itch.io page. You can check all of the different fun little prototypes I've created for you, the audience. And also, you can beat my high score on Astro Barrier. I think it's like 1200 or something. Give it a try. See what happens. I'm sure you'll beat me. I'm sure it'll be just a treat to play. But I think this episode specifically, Window Kill, gave me an understanding of what it meant or what it took to become a game developer. And it kind of got even more reinforced when I talked to Torcado. Right? I feel like he kind of justified me in a few ways, but also when it went against me in some other ways. Like, it blew my mind. Again, this is kind of talking about his episode specifically, but it's tied, it's related. Don't worry about it. Like, it blew me away that he used his own knowledge of the Godot engine on off the cuff within those like 72 hours he had to make the game. Just dedicated to making the final boss, right? And the thing is that the windows also, if you didn't catch on this, we're not like, these windows are real windows that your operating system uses, first of all. And Godot doesn't really have a way to use those as viewports, right? He coded that entirely on his own, which is insane to me, right? He was able to dive into the source code of Godot itself and give it functionality to allow for these expanding windows, which I think is really cool. Unfortunately, the Stanley Parable episode, I did the same amount of research, right? I provided myself with a lot of time for it. The unfortunate thing is I was going through depression. Kind of similar to the depression I'm feeling right now. A lot of it's just kind of like dull. It just, the world feels dull and I just like, it doesn't, I don't have any more passion to give to it. Probably being burnt out, but that's besides the point. And a bunch of other factors too, right? The breakup wing being one of them, but like a bunch of other ones too. And it's just like, coming to terms with that specifically was a very, very engaging time for me. Because I'm like, I could have just skipped this episode. I could have said, okay, I don't have any time for it. But I was like, no, I'm going to make 20 episodes. I'm going to do this. So I dedicated my time. Even though it wasn't the best episode, absolutely not. I feel like I ran around in circles a lot of the time. I didn't really have that much to talk about. I feel like I should have probably bought the newer edition because it's pretty much the same as the old edition, but there's new content. I didn't even realize that until I saw him and his brother play it. His game that he made, right? I'm like, it blew me away because I'm like, well, it would have been the worst episode if not Enter the Gungeon existing. But I feel like also, it's a testament to my dedication to putting out something, anything, rather than just stalling, right? I don't know. It was an interesting time. Cuphead obviously gets an A. I feel like I like a lot of the, I did this one recently. I liked a lot of the introduction. I liked a lot of the build up to kind of giving you more and more context as to how these brothers made the game, right? A lot of this stuff kind of just like was slowly building up. But it also gave me an idea of like, I don't have to invest more than a couple hours in these games, right? As long as you know what you're talking about, as long as the game is into like behind closed doors and you're not like getting it, right? That's why games like, I don't know, Disco Elysium is taking so long to finish, because I'm like, okay, this is a game that I need to know everything about, and the only way to do that would be to play the entire thing from tip to end, right? There's no other way to go about those kind of games, because they're like full story, fleshed out narrative games, like games that are actually like you have to invest into the world, right? And smaller games like Venba, for example, are easy to invest in because they're smaller, right? They have a smaller team working on them, which means that they can, you know, obviously, you know, they don't have to worry about making the game 10 hours because they can just make a very good story in 2 hours. Doesn't make the game any less because, again, like what I said with Alpha Something, he specifically talked about how these people, obviously, you get what you want out of this game. You can invest as much time as you want. I think that's probably the best way to play these kind of games, right? Because you can speedrun any game you want. You can go balls to the wall, going through your entire catalog and trying to beat every game as much as you want. But if you don't invest time into the ones that you actually like, then what are you going to do about that, right? You're not going to actually gain anything from it. That's just me, personally. Let's see, specifically with Columbo. This was the first episode I did covering a show, an actual, you know, film property rather than something to do with music or something to do with video games, right? I think I finally, I have to cover books. That's the last one. I was thinking of doing Discworld, but I'm like, it's a very complicated narrative storyline that it was weaved over 30 years, and I'm scared to finally take the plunge. I'll have to do it sometime for sure. Maybe during the summer when I finally have, like, I get my fish legs back. But I'm like, books specifically are an interesting thing to talk about because it's like, if you haven't read the book, you don't really get it, you know? Like, I can describe to you the full story about Samuel Vimes and his progression from being an alcoholic to overcoming his alcoholism, then being able to capture the attention of the Night Watch and being able to rise up the ranks. There's a whole time travel plot with him in one of the books. There was the curse that he had to go over. It's a beautifully narrative. It's a beautifully carved and weaved storyline. From the whole series, the whole like 8-book series just dedicated to Samuel Vimes. That's like peak. But if I just tell that to you, you don't really get the full meaning of it, right? I have to find a way to I have to persuade you into getting at least one of these books, right? Because if I don't, then this is like nothing pretty much. I'm pretty much just farting into the void. Compared to, let's say, a video game, for example, I can talk about the gameplay, I can talk about the soundtrack, I can talk about all these things. But with a book, you only have the story, and that's pretty much it. So, to each their own, but you can't really talk about a book unless you've read it. Anyway, episode 16 also was a bit of a fluke on the premise that I was burnt out, exhausted. I spent until 3 working on a couple coding assignments and the one composition I had to make for a composition class, and I was beat. I was down on my luck, unfortunately. I'm not going to give myself a C on this one, but this is definitely a B minus because I'm like, I went on hundreds of tiny tangents that made very little sense to people who were listening to it, but at least I kept the energy. So you know what? I'll give myself the Stanley Parable treatment. I'll give myself a B right there. That's fine. Episode 17, the interview with Torquato. This is not uploaded yet again. It's going to be uploaded during the summer. This will be the final parting gift I give you before I go and I leave the show forever. Before my compatriot, if I can even call him that, takes over. But with this specific episode, I was very nervous because leading up to it, like during, I think it was in fall. No, it was in like the early year where I was like, you know what? I need to actually get some hosts. I mean, I need to get some guests on the show, right? Because it's been very blank. I feel like I have not really much to grab onto. But what can I do to make this show better? And I'm like, you know what? Let's give it a shot. Let's email these people. I emailed Torquato. I emailed Alpha something. I was like, hey, if you want to come on the show, here it is. What do you think? Give me a call. Give me a text. Give me an email. Just let me know what do you think and what time we can do it, right? And they both replied, which was astonishing to me. Absolutely astonishing. It was even more astonishing when I finally was able to talk with them. And it was exactly what I dreamed about. It was exactly what I was hoping for. Like, these people knew exactly what they were doing, exactly what they were talking about. And I feel like these episodes are going to be ones that I'd stay with me for a very long time because they were the first ones where I finally was able to break into the gaming industry and able to actually interview people who were in this field inside of this small little niche pocket, right? It's such an interesting thing because they have the same experience as I do, except they probably are more dedicated and more focused on what they actually want out of life. That's besides the point. That's a personal thing. These people obviously know what they want from life, and so they're chasing after it, right? Let's talk about Window Kill especially, though. Like, leading up to it, I didn't really know what to expect. I was like, well, this guy is very talented. He had a bunch of games under his belt. He talked about, you know, all the stuff leading up to it, but I didn't realize that, like, most of this stuff was just pretty much learned from the cuff, and a lot of it was also just, like, him growing up with these tools, like I did, right? I grew up with Scratch, and I grew up with all these other things, and he did the same thing. The only difference was that he had more time, more free time on his hands, and I spent that free time
playing video games, and he spent that free time making video games, right? And I was like, huh, you know what? That's an interesting divide. You know, I feel like I've played to my heart's content. I think I can finally put my laurels down, which is why I'm gonna hopefully, if I have time, work extensively on this one game jam that's coming up, the Ludum Dare game jam, which finally, like he said before in the actual interview, got because a bunch of people finally were able to what was it again? Excuse me. That's my burp think. It's the gas is expelling from my brain and cooling down my entire body. I don't know exactly what it was. No! Yeah, so basically he was losing... the main guy who was doing it, I forget his name specifically. I could look it up, but I'm too lazy. He lost funding, or he didn't have a lot of funding because he was looking for a job specifically. So he called off both this year's... There's two game jams every year, right? And he called off both of them specifically. And I was forlorn because I was like, damn, this is like the perfect window. I wouldn't have to like the exams are coming up, sure. But a lot of this stuff was kind of already known. And I'm like, well, when in Rome, right? I would still work on studying and stuff like that, of course. But I'm like, these game jams are the preliminary thing I needed in order to get into like actually working on them, right? So I'm like, well, why not? If I can't show my expertise on these kind of things, what am I, right? So I was like, yeah, I will do this because it's something that I'm actually passionate about. It's something I want to pursue further. And it was kind of the same thing with Venba and talking to Alpha something about telling a narrative through all of the songs that he did. Like, it was super insightful to see, like, all of the different eras of Tamil music, like, kind of influence this one specific game, right? It goes through all the eras, like, succinctly, and you can feel it, even if you don't actually know what it is. You know, it's like, even if you aren't attuned to the culture, even if you haven't grown up in it, you still get that vibe that it kind of goes through eras and it goes through ages. And the story itself is so well told that it's like, I don't know. It's just beautiful to me. Something about it just like really struck a nerve with me when I was playing it when I was sick during the winter break. But either way. I think both of those. I'm going to give Venba an S, and I'm going to give Windowkill an S+, because I think I was more prepared for Windowkill. Mainly because I was probably more worried about it, but, like, at the same time, I think the questions I came up with, I feel like I was wasting Alpha Something's time, especially with a few of the questions that I kind of asked in between, because I was kind of catching myself a lot of the time. I was like, am I saying the right thing? What did I want to get out of this, right? I don't know. It was interesting to me. It was very, very interesting to me. Windowkill, I think, was more... It had more of a flow to it, because we were talking more about, like, the things that I'm interested in, specifically with game mechanics, and talking about, like, how these things kind of slowly evolve over time, right? What possesses you to come up with a boss one day into the jam after you finish the main framework for the game, and completely spend the entire day working on that final boss, right? Compared to, like, you know, story and narrative and all these kind of more esoteric, intrinsic things that are imperative to telling a very well-told story. But at the same time, I felt like I kind of fell flat with a few of those questions. I feel like Alpha Something did a fantastic job answering them, though. So I'll give my kudos to him. Well done. I appreciate it. The last episode, the last week's episode, we're finally catching up to the modern day, was D&D with Daniel and Dominic. D&D with Dominic and Daniel. Yep. That was a fun one. I'll give it an A+, because it was kind of like a hearkening back to the old times, right? I feel like I was able to catch myself way more often with what are they called? Side tangents. Thank you. I was able to catch myself a lot more with those specifically, and I was able to catch him a lot as well, because I wanted to actually follow the structure that I set out for myself. It's kind of the reason why I was kind of afraid to invite him on a lot of the time, because I'm like, look, I love this guy. He's a great man. Great friend. problem is that we get constantly sidetracked, and I can't always facilitate that when we're trying to actually run a coherent show. Independent Incidentals is a very serious show, or it was a very serious show before it got taken over. But I feel like a lot of the time, I think I did a great... I've got to give myself a pat on the back. You know what? This entire episode is my own pat-backing episode. I feel like I did a great job with all these 20 episodes. Make that 21 now, because it's the end of this episode. The final episode. I hope you had a fantastic time coming with me, talking about all these different properties, video games, few shows, well, one show, and the interviews that I'll eventually post once I edit them. We'll see how long that takes. But stick around, because you know what? I had enough of this guy. You know what? Maybe I'll stick it up to him. Maybe I'll give him a quick little chat, a little talk. We'll see. We'll see what we can do. I hope you have a fantastic summer break. And I hope you stick around with me, because we got some things cooking. I'll keep you posted. Oh, I'll keep you posted. See you around. Love you all. Ladles and germs, this has been Independent Incidentals. And I hope you all have a fantastic summer break. I don't know how to close this. Is that enough? Is that an... I don't... I please...